Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Every team, every topic, everywhere, this is Believe.
What is up, Wizards fans? Welcome to another Believe in Wizards podcast. I'm Matt Moderno. Jahadi White will be joining me here in a second, and we're going to go through the latest on the GM search. We haven't gotten a chance yet to talk about some of the personnel and staff shakeups that the Wizards have made in the last week or so. So we're going to get into that. And then we're just going to hit the mailbag and answer some of your questions. Most of them are for Jahadi and some really insightful ones about, you know, the position that he played in the NBA and what it looks like for centers moving forward and things like that, and what the Wizards need to do on draft night. So we'll get into all that. As always, we're brought to you by Stateside Vodka and their Surfside Hard Iced Teas, Hard Lemonades, Hard Et Ceteras. They're all delicious. They're the official drink of the Moderno family post-pickleball. So definitely refreshing after hot summer activity and things like that. Also brought to you by BetOnline.ag. BetOnline is your number one source for all your basketball info, stats, news, and scores. Get the latest odds and lines, including the latest player reports for this year's pro basketball playoffs. BetOnline is always your sports information headquarters this season, as we have you covered for all your sports wagering needs. From basketball, MLB, NHL, right to UFC and boxing, BetOnline is the fastest and easiest way to get your betting info, including live betting options and your favorite Vegas casino and card games that you can play right from your home. Head to the website today to get in on the action. Be sure to use our promo code BELIEVE, B-L-E-A-V, to receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. Bet online, where the game starts. Cool. With that out of the way, let's bring on Jahadi and let's just kind of get into this GM search. As always, pleased to bring on Jahadi White. Jahadi, how's it going, man? How's your week been so far?
Good day, Matt, my man. Everything's good. It's the weekend.
And we made it. We made it to the weekend.
Right.
There's been plenty of playoff basketball and things like that, but I think the most recent one to talk about is just sort of the Warriors being eliminated last night, because I think that has real ramifications for the Wizards. I think Bob Myers, the Warriors GM, has been the biggest name sort of on the potential GM candidate list. And obviously anytime a GM that has four rings becomes available, it should be noteworthy. And the Wizards are the only team looking for a GM right now. So if he's going to leave Golden State for anywhere, it's presumably here, unless somebody somehow makes a new position for him. I guess, you know, just does the fact that the Wizards haven't like notably announced much movement from an interview process signal to you that maybe Myers was the guy they've been holding out for all along?
I think it's the guy they should be holding out for. Mm-hmm. And now it's much more enticing on both ends because of how the Warriors ended it off, you know, how they ended off the season, which means, you know, it's going to be some things that's going to be kind of shaken up over there. Mm-hmm. On the Warrior side of things, to where it is, it's kind of competing another project. You still got some heavy hitters, but, you know, Clay is getting older.
Yep.
Draymond is, you know, very volatile personality. Mm-hmm. You know, that could be good for the organization, but also brings the organization a lot of flack at times.
Yep.
And then, you know, them losing, them not making the finals this year, you know, not like they normal like they normally did in the past. So it's the right time to really target him. It's the right time. And if I'm the Wizards, I would be holding out exactly for this time.
I think that's a great point too. And I've seen a lot of online stuff, and obviously that's not a representation of the whole fan base, but there's a lot of Warriors fans on Twitter, at least, that are trashing Bob Myers about how, you know, he didn't even draft Curry, so he sort of lucked into this generational talent, and the team recruited Kevin Durant. So really, how many of those rings do you give Myers credit for? And he's the one who's drafted Kuminga and Wiseman and Moody that haven't worked out. It's like, I would happily take this. And I think that's just a point that no matter how good a GM you are, all your picks are not going to work out. Like, you're not going to hit generational home runs with every single guy you take. So even if those players don't develop long term, it doesn't, to me, diminish his track record in any way. It just puts him, you know, on par with other good GMs, like even the Spurs and things like that. You know, there were plenty of guys that they whiffed on.
Well, I don't think he did a bad job by recruiting Kuminga, Moody, and Wiseman. First of all, you got to understand, Kuminga, Moody, and Wiseman on any other team are very good players.
Yeah.
Right? They're very good players on any other team. It's a Golden State is a very unique situation. Mm-hmm. It's a very unique system to play in.
Yep.
Everything is ran. First of all, everything is ran through Draymond, right? Mm-hmm. And it's a motion offense that's nonstop movement that's really predicated on Curry and Thompson getting the ball and a lot of movement. Mm-hmm. Well, guys, it's not the average. It's not the average system. Yeah. So going to that system, you have to be so specific, such a niche and specific type of player, not a great player, mm-hmm. but a player that fits the system really well. Right. So he did not make a mistake on getting great, good players. He may have made a mistake thinking that they could fit that very unique system.
Yep. Yeah, I'm with you. And Kuminga being a really young guy, I think he actually looked pretty good to me this year when I saw him play a reasonable amount. And if I were them, I would have played him more in the playoffs. I guess maybe there was some animosity with him and Kerr about he wasn't happy with his playing time and role. And it was reported today that if he doesn't have a bigger role next year, he's kind of already seeking a trade. You know, to me, it's just sometimes you don't mesh with coaches or fit into a team as well as maybe people think you would, you know, theoretically.
Yeah. Me, if I'm Kerr, I see why I would butt heads. I would personally butt heads with Kuminga if I'm Kerr, because Kuminga wears everything on his sleeve, body language, you know, the way he does things. He's too vocal sometimes. Kuminga has to understand that the Warriors are proven already.
Right.
Like, he's not going to come in and change the system. System already been there. They already been proving themselves. You have to prove yourself to them. They don't have to prove anything to you. And no matter how good you think about how well you can play, first of all, if you don't fit, or you trying to get in, that's not the way to. You can't whine or brat your way in, mm-hmm. And then show bad body language. They don't have to have you. They don't have to use you. They don't have to utilize you. They have a talented roster. Mm-hmm. They made it this far without him. He has to realize how do I fit?
Yeah, again, another great point. I think for me that was sort of the most obvious thing of like, hey, like Kerr is making a point of like, I've got undrafted guys here that'll play the right way. I don't care that you're a lottery pick anymore. Once you're on the roster, you're on the roster. Like none of the rest of that matters. Although I do think they could have used him to guard LeBron a little bit. Maybe he would have fouled too much, but
I agree with that, but he's not going to come in and reinvent the wheel.
Right, exactly. If I am another team though, and he does want out, this was a guy that's a guy I would try to buy low on if I could, because I still think there's a ton of like really untapped potential there. And to your point, he might look better somewhere else.
I think he will. I with him, he's not always going to be perfectly happy. Mm-hmm. You know, it's going to be ups and downs, and anywhere he goes, he has to understand it's going to be trial and error. You know, it's going to be ups and downs, and it's. My concern with Kuminga is if he doesn't get his way or things don't go perfectly how he feel like things should go, because the player he is in his mind, could it affect any locker room? Mm-hmm.
So Johnny, I guess I've got a question for you. Like, We've seen Draymond get away, like away maybe with some temperamental stuff and maybe not be reined in too much emotionally. And now you've got maybe Jordan Poole having similar episodes. You think Kuminga's getting a little frustrated and stuff like that. I wonder if that just set a precedent for like, hey, if we're not going to hold Draymond accountable for some of these outbursts, these younger guys see that and think that they can maybe get away with some of the same things.
No, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, he's the clear leader of the team, maybe not the primary scorer. Mm. Right. Now, when Steph speaks, everyone listens, even Draymond. But he's the vocal leader, the passionate leader, the pretty much the one who makes sure that no one gets out of line on the team as well, right? So, but also he's just very high energy, but very passionate. You know, he's mm-hmm. passionate first, you know, not really, they'll run a lot of things through the filter when he reacts. Mm-hmm. So it gives a green light for a lot of guys to say, okay, this is the way we can go. We can't act this way. Or this is what we should do, mm-hmm. right? Because when you come in, you kind of feel things out and you say, all right, well, I'm feeling it out. All right, so this is how Draymond acts. This may be how he wants, you know, this how he wants people to really respond and get closer to him to be able to kind of move along with the team, how the team energy goes.
Yeah.
So, yeah, absolutely. You know, and that can help out in some cases. And in a lot of cases, it can hurt. I feel like it's starting to hurt. For the young guys, because yeah. they don't have anybody say no. Mm-hmm. That's not how we do it, right? You can't say, but then you can't really say, hey, he can get away with it,
exactly,
right? But he can. But we expect you to act a completely different way.
He's not the first NBA player to punch a teammate. I don't know if you ever had situations where someone punched somebody, you know, in a locker room or whatever, their fights, but. He's the first one where we've seen the video of it publicly.
He's not the first or the last.
Exactly.
He's not the first or the last, right? But, I mean, you could talk to any NBA player at any time, mm-hmm. and they wouldn't fight in the practice or the locker room or somewhere. Men spend so much time together all the time. Adrenaline's going. Everything is competitive, right? Emotions are brewing. It's basketball, yeah. right? And usually it happens. Most time fights happen in the midst of a practice mm-hmm. or a game. I mean, it just does, right? I mean, in the midst of practice or a locker room, sure. in the midst of that battle.
Yeah.
So it's understandable. It's always going to happen. That's not something that's you could permit or you try to prevent. You know, something that you try to prevent. It's actually comes with the territory.
Sure. I don't see it personally as that big of a problem. Like you said, it's going to happen. It's not a unique thing, but we saw it with Brendan Haywood and Etan Thomas here at times. You had it last year with KCP and Montrezl Harrell. But we've never seen video of a veteran teammate, cold cocking his teammate posted all over the internet. Like that so publicly, and then you have the team sort of not really hold Draymond super accountable for it to the point where he's still talking about that wasn't a distraction. The distraction was that someone leaked the video. I mean, it's not wrong. It made it worse, but you got to take ownership of your own actions. And it's not a coincidence to me that Poole had a worse year this year. Like, it's not like last year was a total fluke. He didn't come out of nowhere to have this great year and playoff run. Like, he didn't forget how to play basketball this year. To me, if you think your teammates hate you and you're uncomfortable and all that stuff, and I'm sure that plays a role in your confidence going into these situations.
Yeah, it does. And I think with Draymond's situation, it's not what was done, it was how it was done. Like, mm-hmm. we've seen a lot of fights. It's Brendan Haywood, Tom Thomas, two big guys who can evenly match, evenly yoke. Nope. You can just tell, I don't know Jordan Poole personally, but you can tell he has a very a type of personality to, you know, kind of takes to kind of takes a very patient person to deal with.
Yeah, I think he's a different sort of dude, it seems like.
Yeah, he's definitely a different sort of dude, right? So I can see how we can get to not only Draymond, but get to the team, right? And it seems like he's not a type that bites his tongue. But at the end of the day, Draymond, that's not a guy. I just felt like Draymond didn't really think that one out. He reacted. And I think the pool really, he looks like he can definitely get under your skin and push buttons really easy.
Yeah.
Right. But it just wasn't a fight that Draymond needed to involve himself in. And knowing the guy wouldn't be able to fight him back. Mm-hmm. I think that's really what made it look really bad. If you saw a video of Draymond and
Kevon Looney or something.
Kevon Looney going at it. You'd be like, oh, cool. It would be a completely different story. Yeah. Even if Draymond walked over to Looney and swung at him.
Yep.
Still be a different story.
I agree.
All right. But that's, you know, it's just, I think that's the bad part about it.
It just felt like to me that never really went away. Like that stink from that incident, like the whole season, they just seemed a little off. And I don't know if it's because of that, but I think that probably didn't help them.
It's because it got leaked.
Yeah, exactly.
It was the leaking part that hurt the organization.
Right. Can't trust anybody.
Yeah. Hurts the organization. Right now it's a stigma. It's just like when things get leaked or things go to social media, you know, not to bring up, this is probably not the best situation to bring up. I say it now, but what was the Baltimore Ravens player that really got in a lot of trouble with his girlfriend on the
Ray Rice
on the elevator?
Yeah.
So consider the Ray Rice situation, right? Before you knew something happened, the NFL already said investigated, looked at it. You knew something happened. And they already kind of said, all right, this is what happened. We're going to spend them for a couple of days, this, right? But when you saw the video, completely different story. Now it becomes a monster on its own, which it should have. It definitely should have.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Well, the Draymond Green situation became a monster on its own. Now, now the organization is under fire.
Yeah, and
that affects from top all the way down to bottom. The organization holding a lot of people accountable and putting a lot of pressure on all the players. Now the players are looking at who's at fault, and now they maybe look at Jordan Poole as, oh, okay, well, look what you did. You know, not the guy who leaked the video. So now it messed up with a lot of chemistry and camaraderie sometimes with a team. And so it breeds separation.
And it's not the first sort of incident like that came as a result of something related to Draymond. You know, there was the fighting with KD and things like that. And, you know, a couple of times he's thrown ownership and management under the bus and said he had more to do with bringing in guys than they did. It's like, that's something I would ask Bob Myers about if I'm going to interview him. As good as his track record is as an owner, I would just say like, hey, how come organizationally you guys didn't shut that shit down more? It would just be at least be on my list of questions to ask during the interview.
Well, just basically what you're saying is, do you fear him, or was the whole entire organization in fear of Draymond?
Yeah,
right. And if that's the case, if you couldn't control him or was scared to shut him down.
Yeah, what will you do here, right?
What do you do here if we have a situation like that? Now, granted, Draymond's a very, you know, unique personality. It's pretty much one Draymond in the league. You know, it's always that, pretty much one. You know, Charles Oakley at the time, you know, or, you know what I'm saying? So, but it has to be a bigger voice. It has, in the end of the day, it got to be some, you know, it got to be a honcho.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you're going to have strong personalities at some point, right? It might be nobody as strong as his, but you might have a few like that. And you just want to know what that GM will do to kind of nip that stuff in the bud, I think.
Yeah, that's a great point. That's a good point.
We'll see. It'll be interesting. I definitely think the timing of this, we'll know a lot about what their priorities were and their preferences are GM-wise based on now that if he becomes available for these talks, like, do we see a lot more movement on the GM side? And you saw the Athletic report over the last couple of weeks that the Wizards have been compiling a list of viable candidates, things like that. And they're kind of slow moving. I guess Josh Robbins of the Athletic reported that they're kind of in the early stages of identifying a successor, which I don't know, Tommy got fired a month ago at this point. It seems like we should be a little further along. They've had some conversations with Milt Newton from Milwaukee, Trajan Langdon from New Orleans. You know, there's a couple other names we've heard some rumblings about at the very least. But Eric Pincus of Bleacher Report said, for an incoming general manager, the expectation will be competing for a playoff spot, not rebuilding at least. That's what several competing executives believe. So again, someone's got the mandate. Like, you will build us a winner. Like, there's no organically start this thing over from the ground up. And I wonder still about what that, like, is that as appealing to Bob Myers? I don't know.
That's a great question.
It may or not be. I really don't know.
So Bob Myers have to say, okay, what am I working with?
Yeah.
Do I like the landscape of what I'm working with and mm-hmm. what I'm able to move?
Yeah.
What are my possibilities? What am I capable of moving?
Mm-hmm.
What's my capabilities? What, you know, yeah. am I handcuffed or do I have free reign?
Mm-hmm.
Right. So if I'm Bob Myers, I have to look at the entire landscape, look at the two coaches that was released,
mm-hmm.
right? And say, can I work with this? Is this anything I can do with this? Do I like the platform? I think that's first at hand,
mm-hmm.
right? But I think it's not a bad opportunity.
Yeah.
I don't think the landscape isn't bad, right? It'll be tough. It's going to be tough to move certain players, but you get to do play a rock, you know, you be Rob Pelinka-esque, you know? So it's not a bad challenge.
Mm-hmm.
Now you don't want to go in as a guinea pig, but if everybody's saying, oh, you brought this guy in, or if you believe you did it once, you don't mind showing that you can do it again.
Exactly. I think that's the biggest sales pitch for him. Like, you've got a lot of work to do in Golden State right now. Like you said, do you bring Draymond back? Do you bring Clay back? Can you afford to keep Wiggins? He's been able to operate way above the typical salary threshold. And that's given him some flexibility to keep more talented guys there than a lot of the teams have had opportunities to. So that'll be a big change for him here. But it's, you know, it's going to be messy for Golden State. And this might be a time if you're him to start over, come to an organization, and there's a lot less pressure. If you win anything here, you're a hero. Whereas if Golden State doesn't win another title with Curry, you know, it's your fault. Yeah.
Right. I think with Golden State, it may be some blowing up happening.
Yeah.
I just see it, you know, it's a lot of personalities, a lot of things that people don't get along, you know. So you got to move some major pieces because, I mean, I just feel like Draymond has to go.
Yeah. And if Myers leaves, he definitely goes, I think.
Yeah, Myers leaves, definitely goes. But I really believe he goes anyway.
Yeah.
Just, you have to.
Mm-hmm.
You almost have to. So in that situation, you pretty much taking the anchor of the entire offense and defense away.
Mm-hmm.
So you're like, well, you took, you know, certain GMs rely on certain players. I think he really relied on Draymond.
Yeah.
So you taking his major, you know, his major card away, you know, let's go try it somewhere else.
I would be happy with Bob Myers as the GM. I'm personally hopeful he doesn't bring Draymond with him. Committing big money to him at this stage in his career would not be my favorite.
I don't know, man. I don't know. Because certain situations need certain type of players.
Yeah, that's true. He would shake some shit up.
He would shake some shit up here, and I don't think it'd be for the worse.
Yeah, that's true.
It'd be some accountability.
Right? I'm actually less worried about his locker room impact here than I am just how much money he wants to make as a undersized 34-year-old or whatever it might be.
Yeah, he can't. Yeah, I don't know what I wouldn't trade any of our offensive weapons for him.
Right, exactly.
Our major offensive weapon for him at all. But I don't see a Draymond in Washington. It's a bad situation. With a Draymond and Brad, those two strong personalities, if they get on the same accord and push together, they can push some guys into laying it all out there.
One of the things that even Brad himself has said is that he's not sort of the most vocal push guys kind of leader. He's very happy to be the first one in the locker or first one in the training facility and practice facility and things like that. And he hopes that guys will follow his lead, and he knows when guys don't, but he's not the one like, hey, we'll all be here at 5 a.m. tomorrow morning. And, you know, maybe somebody like Draymond is like, hey, you need to get your ass in the gym is not the worst thing in the world.
You want to shake up and you want somebody to come in. You need that big. You can only rely so much on the coaches, even though they're the coaches. Players respect players first.
Yeah, it's true. Right.
Without the ones like you who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
That, to me, inserting a Draymond type or a Draymond, be really, really good for the Wizards.
I fully subscribe to the theory that every good team has at least one MF-er on it. You know,
right. You got to be the right MF for though.
The right MF for sure, but we don't have any at this point.
You can be, because an MF could easily be a cancer, or he can be a health asset. Draymond could definitely be an asset. He's still going to do all the crazy shit when it comes to yelling, trying to bully all the refs, which gets annoying.
We do enough of that already here.
Yeah, but in the end of the day, guys will be held accountable. And I think accountability is the really something that we've been lacking.
You heard it from half the players in the postseason interviews, and Corey Kispert said it, you know, said the quiet part out loud, like nobody here is holding anybody accountable, and you can definitely do that. I think the other thing with Bob Myers too, it's probably pretty clear he's a Bradley Beal fan. There was a lot of rumblings for multiple years that was somebody the Warriors were interested in if he became available, so I can't imagine that that's totally a fake narrative. I assume that means that he at least sees him as a valuable piece. So maybe that is appealing to him when picking a job.
I think it is. So with Brad as a GM, you can see Brad can work two ways. So you see a lot of factors. To me, Brad can be a Klay Thompson or he can be a Bradley Beal.
Yeah.
If that makes any sense, right? He can be Klay or he can be a Steph. Right? But do you want Brad to more be not the go-to guy, but the guy that the first release guy?
Right.
And you build around, or do you want to build around him? But either way, it's still really two good options.
Yeah. You got flexibility there, which is nice.
Yeah.
You mentioned here the other piece, again, first reported by The Athletic here, I believe, and then Ava Wallace from The Washington Post had it. But the Wizards have moved on from two members of the coaching staff. You've got Alex McLean, the assistant coach and director of player development, was let go after 6 years with the organization. And assistant coach Dean Oliver is let go after 4 years with the organization. These were two kind of surprising moves to me. I think Alex, by all accounts, had been one of the people that had made major progress when they've had good development stories. He'd been kind of at the forefront of that. And then Dean Oliver, I guess, is less surprising because he was a holdover from the previous coaching staff and somebody that Scott Brooks brought in here. But he's like credited as being, you know, one of the fathers of basketball analytics. And he helped Scott Brooks kind of put together a efficient offensive game plan. And you're the Wizards, and you ran sort of a less efficient offensive game plan. It sounded like Dean Oliver was someone they tuned out this year. I think rather than fire a guy like that, that's a dude maybe you should have listened to his input a little bit more. So I don't know. At the very least, it just signals to me that they're going to give Wes like every opportunity here to prove he's worth keeping around beyond the season. And I think he probably thought he didn't have any of his guys. So let's give him a fair shake and say, all right, now you've got all your people that you want. Like, let's see how you really do.
Right. So coaches come with their own philosophies, mm-hmm. no matter what coach it is.
Sure.
Assistant coach, mm-hmm. right? They come from a certain program. Yep. Wherever they learn early on which coach they were under that had most of their coaching impact, had the most coaching impact on them,
mm-hmm.
that's usually the philosophy they take along the way. Then they grab bits and pieces from everybody else.
Mm-hmm.
So I understand where Wes is coming from. Well, when I'm coming here, if these guys are all just here, they are already stuck on this, on their own philosophy.
Yeah.
Right. So first of all, now they not only have to buy into my philosophy first, right? Mm-hmm. But then as I'm asking them questions, all I'm getting is their philosophy regurgitated back to me. Right. So now we have three different philosophies that I'm trying to fight against.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Right. Which probably don't work with what I'm trying to, the system I'm trying to produce.
Yeah.
Right. So then now when I'm trying to be the head coach, and I need you to pass on information, to pass down information, you're passing on the information that you feel is best.
Yeah.
What you see, like from your perspective,
or you're not bought into what I'm saying.
Right, I need you to pass my perspective on.
Sure.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's the first thing. And you talked about, what was the one coach with the analytical coach?
Dean Oliver. He wrote Basketball on Paper.
Yeah, Basketball on Paper. Right.
Yeah.
So if you think about Wes, young Wes. Most likely, he got a lot of his basketball knowledge from Big Wes.
He's an old school guy, for sure.
Right, he's an old school guy. Yeah. Right? And if you keep breaking me down analytics and stats and percentages of all the, right? And so now we need to do this and do that. I think young Wes is a more, eye test.
Sure.
You know, he feels out the game a different way. You know, he evaluates the game maybe a different way.
Sure.
So I need guys who can break it down in my way, and I need a team, right? Some soldiers who all fight in the same way are teaching the same way. So I understand that.
It's not surprising from that perspective. And if you weren't going to take his input, you don't want a lame duck assistant, you know, with the name that people recognize. So I get it. But just watching the offense they ran this year, I think that's a guy I would have wanted them to take more input from, that's been responsible for more cohesive, efficient styles of play. So I don't know. Whatever he does, I hope it's a better fit. But at the very least, this just signals like, all right, Wes, like this is your chance. Like there are no more excuses for you beyond this year. So
gave you everything.
And we'll see what that means. All right, Johnny, let's jump into some fan questions here. Arison Demir asked, what's the biggest difference between the big men in your era and today's era?
The big men in my era were more enforcers. They were there to be enforcers. Was there to play back to the basketball or protect the rim, right? Give hard fouls and just be enforcers in the paint, right? Not no more, no less. Sure. Right. So, which was great. I think I loved it. You know, I played that era. That's the game mm-hmm. I played. This now, the game is much so. The game was played back then with us inside out. Mm-hmm. Now the game is outside in, mm-hmm. right? So, which means now they call everything. Mm-hmm. So, we couldn't even play the game now because everything that's not a foul and back in our day is a foul now,
sure.
right? So, also, we would protect the paint. So if everybody else could switch on the pick and rolls, we would stay home, mm-hmm. right? The whole thing was to protect the paint. Now, they don't want you to protect the paint. For a big, you have to guard 1 through 5.
Yeah.
So if the big can't move, that's why there's less bigs out there. Mm-hmm. The bigs have no can't move on defense or they have to be so effective that they have to somehow produce a different defensive scheme so he can be effective offensively.
Mm-hmm.
But that's why you see really good bigs in college and they never go to the NBA.
Yeah. The Zach Edes of the world and stuff like that.
Because
yeah.
if they can't guard 1 through 5, if the big cannot literally guard a point guard, you have to be able to guard Steph Curry to play. Yeah. As a big now,
and to stay on the court in the playoffs at the very least, yeah.
You got to stay on the court in the playoffs. So, you know, you can't just have a big man mentality,
mm-hmm.
you know. So, now the bigs that's very effective now, like the ADs, right? Then you the Joel Embiids because they can play more back to the basket, they can elbow extended. Shoot threes, mm-hmm. right? And they can move their feet. So they even training. If you watch Joel Embiid game, it's just a bigger Jason Tatum.
He's got the soccer footwork.
In a lot of regards.
Yeah.
Right, it's all footwork. And then you look at, Jokic, right? Jokic, like, his passing game is impeccable. Like, think about how many assists he gives a game. Now he still can play back to the basket, still have touch. So you're not even seeing a lot of the bigs that are like back in our days, that you're not seeing those bigs exist anymore. These mm-hmm. bigs are a completely different type of big, right? They have to be so versatile. Yep. So and which is great seeing, but that's the only way as a big you can last in this game.
Kind of miss it, to be honest. Like, I like college basketball for that reason. I like seeing old school paint basketball, you know?
Yeah, I agree, right? Not, I don't know. It to me, without that, it loses something.
Yeah.
The game loses a major, like, some flair, a major part of the game.
It just becomes more, I don't know, stylistically the same if you don't have at least some of that.
It's a whole bunch of duplications out there now, yeah, right? Sure. We're watching the same player. You know, it's only two positions, guard and forward.
Mm-hmm. That's true. Right. Yeah. And some of these guys are all of the above, you know?
Monotonous, right. You're just watching the same thing.
Yeah. Basically, perfect segue here. Marcus Atkinson asked, what is the future of the big man in the NBA? Do you think there will ever be a chance the traditional back-to-the-basket big men will have a role in the NBA again in the future?
Hopefully it comes back because everything, you know.
Cyclical, yeah.
Everything is cyclical, like you say. So hopefully it comes back. And it's going to be a point the NBA becomes just too soft, mm-hmm. too, you know, I understand you want to get a more exciting, faster game. And now it's going to be a point to where I think analytics just kind of killed the game, me personally, because then it once it became let's match threes with threes, right? Because with a big, a big is 2 points. So you can't match 3 points with 2 points. You're just going to end up losing the game unless you really shut down three-point shooters. But the game had, once if that ever goes away, then you can go back to some traditional big.
Yeah, I was curious if like if there's a rule change or something that that makes it more valuable to kind of have that skill set again. If you move the 3-point line out, or instead of playing twos and threes, you play threes and fours and devalue the 3-point shot a little bit. You know, something to kind of offset that.
Well, I know it's like the end of my tenure in the league. Mm-hmm. When it's all these rule changes, and every rule change every year was to take away more from the big. And I know it's still Shaq. Shaq was probably the greatest thing that ever happened to the big man, and the worst thing that happened to the big man. Because everything was built off of not being unfair. It's unfair he's this large. It's unfair he's able to do this. It's unfair he's able to do this. Oh, well, let's make it more equal. Now Shaq can only get 3 seconds to hold the ball at the ball. He can only get 3 seconds in the paint to get a shot off. He can't do this. Now you can't have the elbow in the back. Now, what can we do now? If I'd known this was coming, I would have learned how to shoot 1,000 jump shots a day, yep. Like 5 years before this,
yep,
right?
Sure.
And so what it did, it just turned small ball. Then I went west and it kept going smaller and smaller and smaller. And this is the evolution to all of that.
Yep. Some of the things you just mentioned, I would actually like to have an official on here at some point, because I see this even playing pickup. Like guys don't. People don't understand some of the nuancey rules and the difference between college and the NBA and even just how you can legally guard people when you could put a forearm on them. Can you not put two hands on a guy? Like stuff like that, I think, is kind of a lot of us fans don't really understand the intricacies of some of the things you all had to go through just to guard certain people certain ways.
Yeah, seriously. I mean, and they change it every year.
Right. That's a lot to keep track of.
It helped certain guys out. It was forced to have certain guys to be able to do more, mm-hmm, and be more flashy and exciting. And certain guys, it was forced to limit a lot of other guys.
Yeah.
So, and what happened? It really limited the big man.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a good question that Marcus asked. Though I will be curious to see where that goes in the next couple of years.
It won't be the next couple of years. You have to
next 10, about 10, 15,
10 years down the line. Right, maybe you see kind of how if things even start to go in that direction a little bit. Because I feel like it's unfair to all the players that's 6'10 and over,
right,
that worked so hard to go to college, then worked hard to be in college and be successful in college and make an impact in college.
Mm-hmm.
Like now, they have to pretty much say to themselves, I'm not an NBA type of player.
Right.
Not because I can't play, because they completely deleted my role from that game.
Yeah. I could see Drew Timmy being an effective player for the Indiana Pacers in 2001. You know, like that would have been
right.
Fun to watch.
Man, come on, man. That's to me, that's unfair. It's not right.
Yeah, I'm with you. Yeah, you've definitely kind of moved away from that. So maybe there's some way to incentivize going back to that. We'll see. Juan Garcia asked, do the Wizards have a, quote, starting point guard? I haven't seen one of those on this roster since John Wall was kicked out.
I don't see one. I haven't seen one.
Yeah,
same. I just haven't seen one. We don't. We lack recruiting in an area.
Three really good backups, in my opinion. I like Monte. I like DeLon. I even like Jordan Goodwin as a high caliber backup.
And we have great role play. We have great system runs.
Yeah.
I call exactly.
them. Yep.
We got a great general. Go here, do that, right? But that's not a point guard in this league anymore.
I think Ravens fans, especially listening to this, will get this analogy. But for me, growing up a Ravens fan, like it was the Trent Dilfer model quarterback, you know, like just the guy, the game manager. That's what Monte is to me.
Right.
He's not going to win you games, but he's the guy that like maybe doesn't lose them for you.
Right. He's coach safe.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. I know I'm putting him in. He's not going to give me turnovers. Not getting ready to throw bad passes. He's going to make sure everybody's in their positions. He's going to run my offense,
mm-hmm,
right? But who's going to get, I need a point guard who can create a bucket.
Yeah.
Not always be the person to give me the bucket, but be able to create a bucket. Mm-hmm. When all things fail, if, hey, guy, hey, point guard is in your hands, I create a bucket.
My good buddy at Bulls Forever, Kevin Broom, and I have talked about this a number of times, and I think we're kind of split on this one. Like, he doesn't think a point guard change moves the needle that much for them. To me, I think it would be a significant boost for them if they had somebody that does exactly what you're talking about, that makes those other guys better, not just himself and is slightly better than Monte, but someone that drags everybody up a notch, I think is the kind of guy you need. I don't know how they get that person with the assets they have available here, but that's to me what this team needs to take kind of that next incremental jump if they're going to keep this core.
We need a point guard who can get in the teeth of the defense.
Yep.
Get on the paint. We need a De'Aaron Fox. We need, you know, a Spider Mitchell, you know. We need a point guard who can score, can put points on the paint, right? So now you got a point guard that can get in teeth in the defense, and you got to respect that he can put points on the board.
Bingo.
It frees up everybody else.
Mm-hmm. So you know what Jalen Brunson
working the perimeter, and I'm running your play, working the perimeter, right? Like some red running some red R back stuff. You know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah, I'm with you.
You know, yeah, I'm always gonna be useful. I'm always gonna have a job, but I'm not, you know, making the world spin.
Exactly. Yeah, that doesn't move the needle for them for sure. Along the same lines, can we get a win? Asked, what does this Wizards team need to be not only a playoff team, but a contender for the NBA championship? I would say that position makes them a playoff team. I don't think it makes them a contender.
Need two is two positions.
Yeah.
So I think it's two positions, and it's a personality.
Mm-hmm.
I think you got to get a dominant big. And I'm not talking about Porzingis because I don't consider him a big. You got to get a five man who can really protect the basket, really rebound. Right? You don't really have to score, and if you need him to do some dirty work, catching Bob, scoring, fine. But you got to protect the basket, really rebound. You need a point guard, just like we said, but we need a dominant personality.
Yeah.
Right. We need a dominant personality with some that players are willing to follow and can create some accountability.
Mm-hmm.
Now they may come into the in with it usually comes in with a point guard.
That's true. Good. Yeah, especially a high-end point guard that people have to respect and pay attention to. I think I'm
unless you want to get Paul George, you seem like he might be being a Paul Chris Paul, he might be available.
I was wondering how hard of a move they make for a player like that. That seems like a very Wizards thing to try to do. And that would scare me, a guy that, you know, you're probably at this point in his career, maybe getting 50 some games from. And we just got lucky with Porzingis's health realistically. And Brad had a pretty banged up season, like bringing in Chris Paul at $40 million a year to also, you know, get banged up. Like, you better keep a damn good backup.
Right. The game moves like this.
Yeah.
It moves up and down.
Yep.
And that ancient basketball is just on its way out. And I just hate to say it, but, you know, if you watched the Lakers game last night, look how fast that game moves.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Look how fast it goes up and down. Look how fast when they made their runs, you know, again, the ball's moving. It's no calling plays. It's no set. Like, setting up a play is the last option.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you want to be freewheeling and let guys make some plays and go.
Mm-hmm.
I think the only thing I would add to what you said on the big suggestion is, it's somebody that can do the dirty work for Porzingis, but I think can also be switchable enough. Like, Porzingis, I don't want having to chase guys around the perimeter if he doesn't have to. And the notion of playing him and Gafford together, these two drop coverage bigs, like I just think good teams with good guards are going to shred you if you do that. So whoever's next to him has to be more mobile laterally than he is, yeah, at least.
Exactly. And that's what I'm saying now. We need the, like the conversation, the question you asked before, like the fan asked about if the bigs, would the bigs come back or why the bigs aren't like they are now. Because they have, like, you have to have, be, like you said, you have to be a switchable big. Mm-hmm. So that has to come, that's pretty much a given. You have to be that type.
Yeah. I agree. Along the same lines, 4000 Ye asked, do you see us drafting a franchise changing player with this pick? I think it depends on where they end up. If they win the lottery on Tuesday, yes, I do. If they end up eighth or ninth, probably not.
I think that's the goal.
Yeah, right.
Definitely the goal, you know, yep. But I think that's every team goal,
yep,
that has its first seven picks.
Mm-hmm.
You know, any team in the top seven, that's their goal.
Unless you're Tommy Shepard, right, now, who said he only wanted to draft role players.
No way. Well,
that's why he's not here anymore.
We can see what that led to.
Yeah, exactly. CD Chat asked, what is the latest on the GM search? We already answered that. And will the Wizards really go into this draft without a new GM given their poor draft record? I think there's a 0% chance that they don't have a GM by draft night.
They will.
By the lottery, maybe not, but...
Right, they were like you said, they didn't go get a scout or a company to go try to find these GMs. Ted said, "I'm taking it on myself."
Mm-hmm.
Me and a couple of people that I respect their opinion, we're going to go get a GM based on what I feel. I do trust Ted's his opinion when it comes to that, right? So I think and just I know that he's definitely going to get it way before the draft. He's going to bring one in.
You have to. It would just be such a bad look. Like, I mean, you can't go into the biggest, you know, especially if they end up with like a top five or a top four pick. Like, it would be crazy. Although I don't know, maybe if you win the lottery and everybody knows you're going to take Victor Wembanyama, maybe you don't need a GM to be there for that. But
do you take Victor Wembanyama? So how does that work? I mean, you don't get him. I understand he's one or two, but just after possibility, can't play him and Porzingis together.
I think you tell Kristaps, we've enjoyed your time here. enjoy Minnesota or wherever, or Portland.
Kristaps' name become Chris Steps.
Exactly, man.
You're gonna get a step out of here.
Yeah, I love that. Yeah, I think that's exactly it. Yeah, he's too good to pass up on at that point. It's the question is, what do you do with everybody else? Do you fully rebuild? I don't know. And that's what Kurt Bone, our last question, asked. Like, should we blow it up and rebuild, or build on what we have team wise? We already said that Ted wants to build on what they have, but you know, if certain things
I
go
think
a certain
it's a little
way,
bit of half and half.
Yeah, agreed. You retool around Brad and see.
Yeah,
what you got.
I think it's a little. You keep two. You got to free up some good money. I say you keep half.
Yeah.
You know, keep the right pieces and let a lot of pieces go.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'd be trying to do like you said, what Rob Pelinka did at the deadline, and just flip the right guy. You know, flip people for the right guys.
Yeah, you got to pull a Linka. Yeah, pull a Linka, man. So.
Last thing I want to ask you about is this Anthony Davis concussion thing and sort of the Stephen A. Smith coverage of it. I don't know if you saw this video, but Stephen A. came out and said, like, he can't believe that AD is going to miss the next game with just a concussion. And he can't believe that he needed a wheelchair to get him off the court. And it's so soft and the league's become so soft and all this stuff. And then said, like, afterwards, when he got asked to apologize for that it wasn't, he wasn't saying the concussions aren't serious. He just can't believe that AD was going to act like he got a concussion from that play. As if like a soft hit to your head can't also cause a concussion sometimes. So I don't know. You played in the league in an era where concussions were probably not as big a deal and people didn't make as big a deal about them. So I was just curious sort of your take on the Anthony Davis concussion situation and that sort of take from Stephen A. Smith.
So you play against Dikembe and Shaq and all these and elbows everywhere.
Yep.
Yeah, I think during our day, we would play through a concussion. Mm-hmm. We literally would play through a concussion. I know I have.
Yeah.
I know I've got hit by Shaq one time so hard. And just my ego would let me fall down.
But
and I was like, I'm trying to run up and down the court three or four times till I can see again. I literally did that.
Yeah.
Right? Doesn't mean it's the right thing to do or it makes sense.
Exactly.
Right? So now that you know what you know and it's more information out there, mm-hmm. if he has a concussion, right? Like, he knows how he feels.
Yep.
Now, I know the stigma with AD. Some of it, you got to be like, I call my son AD sometimes. He keeps getting hurt. Well, you mean AD. So I get that. So I see what, but the thing is, and I want to say this correctly, unless you really ever played on that level of physicality in this game, like, why? Listen, I get it. I get the stigma with AD. But you, unless you got hit like that before, or you understand that, right?
Don't talk on it.
Yeah. Well, you don't know.
Yeah, you can't. Right? You can't tell him how he should feel about.
Yeah, you can't tell him. So, and the thing is, it's too many people who never really can even accepted a hit like that, or mm-hmm. played to the point to be in the. In the war, because he was right under the basket when that happened, like to get hit like that. I understand those some hits that don't look like anything, feel like everything, mm-hmm. right? And then sometimes you can fall on your back or something on your head, and that's the one that you can get right up from.
Mm-hmm.
So you never could tell what a hit in the head.
Exactly.
You know, it's always some. So, you know, it's tough because everybody is wants to speak on everything. And I think, you know, from that perspective, yeah, you can say what you think what you see in the game. But when a man gets hit in the head, right? Like, you gotta know. Now me, I literally I took some elbows from Dikembe even at Georgetown, mm-hmm. just when he comes back. But then I have, like I told you, man, I have. And then I got tested for a concussion later on in my life,
mm-hmm.
and it read that I had 4.
Yeah, I believe it.
All right? Yeah. So players deal with concussions every day, and most of them, they don't even know they have.
Yep.
So I don't hold AD, you know, anything against AD for really making sure he was okay.
We had a 6'6 center in high school. We were playing in the summer league outdoors. It was hot as shit. And he caught me right in the face, like our guy on a rebound. I was just at elbow level and
mm-hmm.
I was like throwing up about 30 seconds later. Like it was rough.
Blacked out, right?
It was bad. I mean, like, so
yeah.
I've taken harder hits. You know what I mean? It catches you the right way sometimes.
Right time, right place, you know, in the right point in your head, you know. Don't always have to be the hardest hit. It just have to be in the specific spot.
I think that's why you're Stephen A. Smith. You have a platform like that. You just kind of got some grief for saying that Kawhi Leonard should have played through the MCL tear and things like that. Like, if you're like, hey, the guy rolled his ankle, you know, I would have liked to see him go back out there and tape it up. Like, that's one thing. But head injury, a back injury, a serious knee injury, like, just shut up. It's just... you know, young kids are listening to that and they're like, oh, I could play through a concussion too.
Right. Young kids are listening to this. I watched First Take. I watched Stephen A. Smith. It's entertaining.
Sure.
It's entertaining, but the people I listen to on the show,
yeah,
right? I just look at him as a, you know, he's as entertainment.
Exactly.
He's speaking, right? Yep. He has a big personality, right? It's entertaining. But it's certain opinions that I only look for when I'm watching that show. Yep. It's not majority of the opinions that I am looking for are not his.
Exactly. Or Mad Dog. I don't even know who the shit Mad Dog is, but that guy is so terrible.
Bob Cousy.
Exactly.
Yeah. Pistol Pete would have never done that.
So let me get this straight. You like Larry Bird. Is that where we're going with this?
Right. Yeah, oh, geez.
Yeah, those are rough. Yeah. I feel bad for J.J. Redick and Tim Legler and Richard Jefferson and these guys. Like, it's
and they just have to shake their head a lot of times.
Yeah.
Only person who really speaks up and say, look, guys, we understand it's your job here, but you have no idea what you're talking about. You never experienced it. You never lived it. And you sound ridiculous.
Yeah, they need to hear that sometimes, I think.
Yeah.
Jihadi, anything we haven't touched on here that you want to hit before we get out of here?
No, I'm good. I enjoyed the show.
I think we've covered it up. Hopefully by the next time we record, there's a new GM to talk about or something. We're starting to hear about other teams scheduling like draft workouts and things like that. We have not heard that at all for the Wizards. So, hopefully those are happening behind the scenes and just not being talked about, but they don't want to get too far behind the curve there.
Yeah, I mean, I'm pretty sure they are. I mean, listen, Wizards are a basketball organization. They're not new to this. They've been around a long time. They're not stopping the entire train just because of the GM situation.
Yep. Yeah. And John Thompson III knows what a good basketball player looks like. So he can sit in on these workouts and make sure they get through the right things. All right, everybody, you know the drill: rate, review, subscribe, all that good stuff. We were presented by betonline.ag and we will catch you next time.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
You know when you're listening to a true crime story that has an unbelievable plot twist that makes you stop in your tracks? That's what our podcast, People Are the Worst, brings you with each episode. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Rebecca. We're identical twins who love true crime cases that make you say, "Didn't see that coming," and we hate the people responsible for them. Listen to People Are the Worst now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.